Chapter 4, The Chase, The Update, and The Dancing Man. Today, Constable Daniel Taylor was out of breath. His gangly limbs flailed madly as he pursued his quarry. He was going to catch this one. He was going to get that handbag and bring it and its thief back to the cafe, where Polly would see what a hero he was. Polly was the waitress who brought Daniel his lunch when he was working the day shift. Her curly red hair, freckled face and slightly crooked but charming smile more than made up for the substandard cooking of Dimitri, a seemingly large tattooed man whom Daniel had only ever caught glimpses of through the slot in the wall where full plates arrived and empty plates left. Daniel had wanted to ask her out for weeks, but every time he plucked up the courage, she'd always seemed so busy and only seemed to walk past when his mouth was full. They'd talked a little while she took his orders, small talk. She was studying English and always had a book tucked into the front of her apron. Daniel had never been a big reader, but recently he'd developed a taste for it. He was determined that this lunchtime was his moment. His comment about what poor sod had to clean up after Gatsby's parties had made her laugh. He was going to ask her out, as soon as she came back with a slice of pie. The little bell above the door tinkled. A young man entered the cafe.
"Polly," Daniel practiced under his breath, "there's this book market on the South Bank."
The young man's eyes fell upon an expensive-looking leather handbag draped over the back of a chair. Its owner was engrossed in her friend's story of regret. "Polly, you like books? I need to fill up my shelves with something good." The young man stalked towards his target, not noticing the mumbling copper.
"I believe it was Blyton who said..."
"Hey!" Polly yelled.
Daniel looked round to see the object of his affection pointing at the young man, who was now clutching the handbag. Daniel's eyes narrowed. The youth's eyes widened. Daniel stood up, a little dramatically, aware of Polly's eyes on him as he did so. He put on his Bobby's helmet.
"Come on, mate. Just put the bag down," Daniel said in his most authoritative tone.
But the bell tinkled again, and the young man was gone. Daniel scooted his way out of his booth as fast as he could, squeezing past Polly on his way to the door. What was her expression? Admiration? Excitement? Lust? He didn't have time for a full body language analysis. Once again, the bell tinkled, and Polly felt a slight and surprising flutter. What was that? All she knew was that she had an overwhelming desire to kiss Constable Daniel Taylor. Adam had been walking for about an hour. London had become even more exciting since he'd last visited, if that was possible. People from all over the world seemed to be here. Whilst walking through Brixton, he'd smelt foods that had stirred a dozen old memories of far-flung places and long-lost friends, as well as men with perfect smiles. Giant pictures showing off new and exciting inventions were also plastered on the sides of walls. Food, drinks, and cars. The cars were amazing. When he reached the river, he stopped on the bridge and, after admiring the new style of boats below, turned his back on the water and spent a full 10 minutes just watching these amazing machines. They did have a smell, but it was 100 times better than horses. The most bizarre thing about it all was that no one seemed impressed. It reminded Adam of the first time he'd gone to Rome. He had marvelled at the architecture, the markets, the roads, but to the Romans it had just been another Dies Saturni. The only thing that did turn a few heads as he continued on his journey was himself, and Adam suspected that had more to do with his golden coat than him. He'd just stopped to look at another of the giant posters, this one telling him to visit the Holy Land. After what happened last time, Adam didn't plan on going back if he could help it, when a young man sprinted past him. He was carrying a small leather bag.
"Stop that man!"
yelled a figure in black and white clothing, wearing an odd domed hat. It was a nice hat, with a silver badge on it. He tore past Adam, chasing the man with the bag.
"I said stop!"
In the name of the law!
The law? Adam joined the chase, catching up with the lawman. Good afternoon, Sheriff. Am I near St. Paul's? Asked Adam.
What? It's about 15 minutes that way, panted the lawman
as he clocked Adam's seemingly glowing apparel. His quarry was pulling away. Keeping pace, Adam reached inside one of his pockets. So does that mean I'm close to... Adam squinted at the paper. It was hard to read and run at the same time. UCL, Faculty of Arts and Humanities.
Look, I'm a little busy at the moment, sir, spluttered the lawman.
Oh, I'm sorry. Allow me, Adam picked up the pace, but slowed down almost immediately and fell back in step with the lawman.
You aren't going to kill him, are you?
What?
No.
Torture? Remove any body parts?
No.
Great. Glad to hear it. You can never be too careful. And with that, Adam shot off at Olympic speed, after the man with the leather bag, catching up with him as they tore round a street corner.
Please stop, Adam requested.
Piss off,
the young man retorted.
Adam grabbed the youth and with a practiced move threw him effortlessly to the floor.
While we wait for the lawman, I don't suppose you know where, he had to recheck the paper, the UCL Faculty of Arts and Humanities is, do you? Constable Daniel Taylor turned the corner to find the thief from the cafe being sat on by the man in the gold coat. It was one of the strangest things he'd ever seen. The man in the gold coat repeated his request for directions. Since his thief wasn't currently going anywhere, Daniel obliged, looking them up on his phone, much to the wonder of his citizen deputy. Daniel asked the man in the golden coat for a statement, but he apologised, saying that he was in a hurry, wished him good luck with his bounty, grinned broadly, and then sprinted off. Daniel received a hero's welcome when he returned to the cafe with the criminal and the bag. He felt so full of beans that he chanced his luck and asked Polly out there and then, no faux pretense about books necessary. And she said yes. And the thief told them to get a room, which later on that week, they did. Over the ocean, in a New York City nightclub, Paul wasn't feeling so lucky. It was 11 p.m. and he'd been sitting on the same bar stool since 7. And what wasted hours they'd been. He wasn't even drunk yet. Every beer took him about an hour to drink, the end of each glass a warm and flat 2 inches. He kept forgetting they were there, lost in the fog of his own misery. So he'd order another and start the whole wretched process all over again. Paul slammed his glass down on the bar to get the server's attention, and she looked over to him with a roll of her eyes. She could barely hear him across the bar over the volume of the music, but that didn't matter. They both knew what he wanted. His order hadn't changed all night. Paul tapped his phone to pay, only to discover that he'd maxed out his contactless for the day. He reached for his wallet, looking through it for a bill or a card, but instead he saw the photo of her, smiling up at him. Paul threw a $10 bill at the server, who took it begrudgingly and handed over the beer. She did not return with change. Paul looked at the photo of Haley with his arm around her. They were both smiling. It was a picture from one of those overpriced photo booths. He couldn't remember where. They were both wearing winter clothes and that was it. Ice skating at Madison Square Garden. 7 years. How could she just be done after 7 years? They were in love. Everyone had always teased them about how in love they were. How Disney-like their whole story was. But no fairy tale ends with the princess walking out on the prince on a grey October afternoon. After a moment's deliberation, Paul left the picture on the bar and spun around on his stool, surveying the scene. He looked at all the young, trendy people dancing. He didn't belong here. Paul wasn't old, but he'd never liked places like this. He'd been dragged here by a work friend who'd left hours ago. But Paul didn't feel like going home. Home felt haunted. It was better to be out. Then again, this place was almost worse. Everywhere he looked, he saw happy couples, kissing in a booth, dancing cheek to cheek. One very keen pair even pressed up against a wall. That was it. This was going to be his last drink, then home. If he drank any more, he ran the risk of calling her. There was a sudden thud. A dishevelled-looking man in a dirty, sandy-brown suit flopped down on the stool next to him. He was wearing a pink floral shirt and sporting a fresh black eye. The man saw Paul looking at him furtively, and he smiled. With his injured eye, he looked as if he was winking at him.
"You should see the other guy." The thick stench of tobacco smoke wafted towards Paul. The man waved to get the server's attention. "Excuse me, do you think I could get some ice?" She nodded, noting his injury. It was going to be a night of interesting characters who tipped squat. "And a double of Jack. Thank you." The server nodded again, disappearing behind the bar. Despite the music, a silence seemed to hang between the two men until... "Ain't you gonna ask me what happened?"
"Excuse me," said Paul, rather hoping the question wasn't being directed at him.
"Guy sits down next to you in a bar with a fresh shiner, and you don't even want to know what happened?"
The server returned with the ice and the whiskey.
"What happened?" Paul had never been great at small talk. "Just caught my girl with some guy from her gym in our bed." The man took a long drink of whiskey. "Oh, I'm sorry."
Paul was beginning to feel more and more uncomfortable and began to hastily chug his beer.
"Yeah, we've been together 3 years, you know. I know we're all animals and love is just chemicals firing around our bodies, and sometimes those chemicals stop firing for you and start firing for some asshole from the gym. When you hear these scientific reasonings, it would be irrational not to accept them, but part of you always hopes it'll turn out different."
The man downed his whiskey.
"I'm Sam, by the way."
Surprising himself, Paul replied,
"I'm Paul. Actually, I just had a breakup too."
"You know what? I kinda guessed. Well, not guessed. I can read body language," said Sam. "And I'm a little psychic."
"Is that so?"
Paul couldn't help the smile creeping up the corners of his mouth.
"Yeah.
Okay. What am I thinking now?"
Paul had always been a skeptic. The chance to expose Sam was a welcome distraction.
"You're thinking, this guy's full of it. You're thinking, I just wanted to drink my sorrows away in peace, and now I'm stuck talking to a complete stranger about feelings when I don't even talk about my feelings with my friends, no matter how many times they ask."
Sam leaned towards Paul.
"How'd I do?"
"Well enough for me to buy you a drink."
Paul beckoned the server over.
"Another one for both of us, please."
She raised her eyebrows, letting them know that the drinks would be coming, but that she disapproved of how quickly they'd finished the last ones.
"Now, where was I?" Sam asked. "Love, I believe." "Right, thank you. So, the way people write about it in poetry and songs, you'd think love was the most powerful thing in the universe. Sadly, this isn't true,"
proselytized Sam.
"Love can be broken, love can decay, and love can be forgotten. Also, love is," Sam gestured to his eye, "not always a good thing."
Paul liked a good philosophical debate, and it felt much easier to discuss big, abstract questions than ponder why the love of his life had left him.
"But isn't it better to have loved and lost than never?" Sam cut him off. "Blah, blah, blah, sure. But that depends on the love. It can come in a whole heap of painful manifestations. Unrequited love, obsessive love, false love. You don't want any part of that."
The drinks arrived, and for a while they sipped in silence.
"So, are you done with love then?" Paul asked.
Sam pondered this for a while, pushing back his thick, dark hair.
I don't think we're allowed to be done. I don't think we're wired that way. It may not be the most powerful thing, but love is unique in the universe in one regard. It motivates like nothing else. It inspires acts of great bravery and unbelievable stupidity. Sam downed his whiskey, which is why I'm going back to talk to Paula right now. Thanks for the drink, Paul. Hey, get back on the horse. You're a catch.
He smiled, placing a hot, clammy hand on Paul's back. He then got up and started to head for the exit that was on the far side of the crowded dance floor. But he turned back to impart one final nugget of drunken advice.
That's the other thing about love. It'll get you when you are least expecting it.
Sam gestured over to a booth in a corner of the club, where a pair of green eyes were fixed on Paul. There were three women in the booth. Two of them were talking. The older of the two was visibly tall, even when seated. Her mid-length blonde locks didn't have a hair out of place. Her face was solemn, majestic, and powerful. The other, dressed in a black turtleneck and sensible trousers, wore her brunette hair up. Her face was pulled tight, as if deep in thought, and the club lights danced off her glasses, making her eyes appear to flash. Paul vaguely thought he recognised the blonde one. Was she a news anchor or something? But the green eyes didn't belong to either of them. They belonged to a woman with long red hair, which fell in loose curls down her neck to the small of her back. Her lips were slightly parted, and as Paul stared, he swore he could hear her breathing. Before he realised he was doing it, he began to make his way towards her across the dance floor. She smiled, though the smile never reached her eyes, but he didn't care. She was smiling at him, Paul Manning. As he drew closer, he started to catch snippets of what the other two women were saying. The music was quieter here. These were booths in the club where traditionally sweet nothings were whispered and bad decisions were made. The chat in this booth now seemed remarkably, well, professional.
Look, I honestly don't care what they're asking for. Just give it to them, said the blonde.
I'm not sure they'll budge. Lucy, you know, he's been good to them, and we don't have anything concrete to offer. We knew a partnership with the Infernal Region was a long shot. The brunette pushed her glasses up her nose as she looked at some papers in front of her. The blonde's legs shook under the table, expressing some repressed agitation. But, continued the brunette, our research in the field is paying off. Michael is still comfortable, and we should be ready to make our move soon. Paul had no idea what they were talking about, and he didn't care. All that mattered was the enchanting creature who held his gaze. For the first time in a long time, he felt truly happy. The redhead with the green eyes leant over the back of her booth, her mane tumbling forward. Paul could feel his eyes brimming with tears.
And what about Adam? The blonde asked.
He found another way in that none of us even knew about.
That information could be useful for a contingency. He needs to be brought in for negotiation.
All the bitterness, all the heartbreak, gone. Just like that. Replaced by a fire that burnt from his heart to all his extremities.
Diana's ready to make contact. She doesn't foresee any delay or complication, answered the brunette, checking her notes.
Anna, the blonde woman said with a voice of deadly seriousness, it is vital that we bring Adam in. Do you understand me?
Yes, mother, the brunette replied quickly. Paul found himself beside their booth. The woman with the green eyes reached an outstretched hand over towards him, touching him very gently on the cheek. Hi. Her voice was intoxicating. How could two letters brought together produce such longing? I'm Amy, she continued. Her hand was soft and warm. He could smell roses and apples. Would you dance for me? I'm bored. She cocked her head to one side, exposing the delicate nape of her neck. Paul didn't dance. He never danced. Haley always used to get annoyed with him for not dancing. But he would dance tonight. Paul danced for her for hours, while the other two women talked, and he kept on dancing. Dancing until she and her companions left just before dawn. It wasn't until he got home that he realised just how much blood was in his shoes. It was a week later when he noticed the hand-shaped blister on his back. After Sam had left the club and caught his ride, he flicked on the small screen in the back of his car. The live feed from the oblivious Paul Manning came through smoothly. Though the eyes of the dancing man were focused on the redhead, his focus was on the conversation happening behind her. Sam listened intently to the other two women. His adversary's plans were becoming clearer.
Put a lovesick man in the path of a goddess. Boom works every time, he mused, his Boston growl dropping to a smooth southern drawl.
He massaged the bruise from his eye. It melted away like an actor's spirit gum prosthetic. It had been a little risky to actually go into the club if the women had got a whiff of him. There would have been fireworks. But he'd always had the utmost confidence in his disguises.
Master Lucy,
his driver, Charon, piped up from the front of the long white car.
Yes, replied Lucy, changing out of his Sam persona, discarding the dirty suit for a pair of comfortable slacks and a cashmere jumper.
I've just received a message, sir. It's Adam.
He's arrived in London.
Has he now? Thank you, Charon.
Lucy mused. What could the boy possibly have to do with the plan? He would have to find out. Lucy knew better than most that the devil was in the details.
You've been listening to Evergreen, Chapter 4, written by Sam Russell and read by Catherine Russell. If you enjoyed it, wherever you're listening, please subscribe, give us a like and a review so we can get this story into more people's ears. And if you really liked it, you can support this project on our Ko-fi page. All the details are available on our Twitter, @EvergreenBook1. The next chapter comes out on the 26th of July. Thanks for listening.